You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, yo. Before we get into today's episode of Axe to Grind, we got a little premiere track for you. You know we love doing this stuff. The band is Domain. Their debut LP, Life's Cold Grasp, coming out March 8th. Pre-order is going up today on Days. So go to days-style.com, days-style.com. That's where you get all the merch. You get the pre-order. You got to check this one. The song is called Corrode. Features a very familiar voice. So features the vocalist of Indecision, Tom Sheehan. So check this song out, Corrode, by the band Domain. Go get that LP off Days, days-style.com. Let's go.
Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I am Eric, filling in for Patrick.
I'm Bob.
I'm Tom. You don't even have to say filling in. You're Eric.
No, you just got to restart.
Might not even be a temporary thing.
I wanted to give it that like news correspondent kind of style to it. Like,
I respect you know. It.
Look at this, you know? Mr.
It may
Media.
Not be temporary if you keep fucking around like that.
So, Eric, thank you for jumping in. Let's give a little of the behind the curtain.
Jesus Christ.
Our good friend. Our fearless Gilligan.
Our acquaintance.
Wow, friend of the pod.
Did you hear, Eric, about the... He sent an invitation out to one of our dear friends, and that friend said, "This is exactly what I should expect from the worst friend I've ever had."
Oh my God.
I know. It was brutal and hilarious in the moment. Like, I read it, I cackled. I knew part of me was laughing because it was so funny. Part of me was laughing because I knew how hard Tom was laughing about it.
Oh, I was dying. It was like so like It was succinct, and it like worked on like three layers.
Like surgical. It was just like,
yeah,
like someone walking up and going, oh, here, hold on, I'm gonna do quick open heart. Okay, we're all done.
Yeah, like imagine like your good friend comes up to you and is like, yeah, I already told these other two guys, but if you want to come, it's happening. You'd be like, what the
wanna? Yeah.
It was like so like thrown off and what, but the way he responded,
I loved
it. Totally dry. It was, you know, oh my God.
So anyways, so today, I actually spoke with Patrick earlier this week and was like, hey, you got a day off. I know you get to Europe, but you got a day off on Monday between your shows. I don't remember. I think it was Belfast and then
Dublin and then Belfast.
Yeah. Dublin or some Belfast, Dublin, one of those, and then Glasgow, whatever it is. And he had a full day off. And I was like, you're probably traveling. Don't know what that looks like, whatever. But, you know, let's try to make that work. It's been radio silence, which, hey, that's all right. That's the way Axe to Grind rolls sometimes. Sure. Reach out today, talk. Tom, as per, is like, hey, yeah, 8 o'clock. Sure. All right, cool. We're cool. Cool. Let's see where Patch at. I do put in a request to him also. Hey, post up that Patreon. He doesn't reply, but he does do the thing he's asked to do.
Oh, love another, that.
Another staple behavior. Very good. Good work by you, Patrick. And then we finally hear from him. He's like, I'm trying. I just got here working on Wi-Fi that's being run by like a mouse chasing a gopher.
I'm at a casino across the street.
Yeah. Then he's like, it's a hard no. I can't do it. The Wi-Fi's so bad. I'm outside screaming in the rain.
Like Andy Dufresne. He's out there like Andy Dufresne just crying to the...
Meanwhile, we know that MF-er is laying in a hotel bed watching SportsCenter or the UK equivalent, watching Forensic Files.
Yeah.
Taking his belly button, scrolling the internet. So shout out to our good friend for doing that, and even more thank you to Eric for stopping in. Eric, how's your day? How you doing? How you feeling?
Doing all right. It's been raining in Los Angeles for a while. I personally am no stranger to the rain, having grown up in the Northeast, but people really, there already is like a psychic bubble of mental illness that like encompasses Los Angeles County of the people that live out here. When something happens that they're not used to happening, it really, something like really like deranged happens inside of them. Also, the line for In-N-Out is blocks long.
Yeah, like, oh no, it's raining. We better stock up on In-N-Out.
They need it. They can't live without it.
Well, with that said, to things you love and can't live without, let's get to our sponsors. Some folks we love and can't live without. Thank you to Run for Cover Records.
Big up.
He's doing well. Thank you to Close Casket Activities.
Let's go.
Thank you to Convulse Records.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
And thank you to Live a Lie.
Ow.
And we're going to start. So really, you did. That was a good Patrick impression all along. We're going to start with To Live a Lie, tolivealie.com, and you're going to click on the web store. We're going to highlight what, for my money, is one of the best records of 2024 so far.
Ooh.
I know it's early, so saying that's kind of a funny thing. This is the Dry Socket Sorry for Your Loss LP. Band from Portland, Oregon, Pacific Northwest. You got it. Look, when you see a record that's coming out, it's a split release between To Live a Lie and I think Blind Rage has an exclusive as well. You think it's just going to be fast. I've seen some videos. I listened to some of the older material. Certainly fast, certainly punk, certainly hardcore, but like leaning on that chaotic, crazy side. Then I started listening to this new LP, and I don't know if it maybe just was lost on me previously. This record is beefy. The guitars are big.
It's riffy.
Riffing and like, look, some of the comps get Painted Black, Punch, Negative Approach. Sure, sure, sure. I hear stuff even going towards Suicide File.
Yep.
Deathwish catalog, Bridge 9 catalog, early stuff, early aughts. Because of how big the riffs are, it feels very unafraid. In the same way, riff-wise, as some of the, like, the way I feel about Gel, where I think their riffs, yeah, they're a punk hardcore band through and through, as I would say for Dry Socket, but they're not afraid to go big riff, and they're not afraid to show, like, hey, we can play these guitars like an MF and Vibe. Great record, I think. Friend of the pod, Dave, toured the Pacific Northwest and said this was the best band that Planet on a Chain played with. And that was no diss to any of the other bands they played with. It's just that this band stood head and shoulders above everything else. They just like crushed. So everybody's going to go check this record out. I don't know how many copies of this record are left. So go get it now. Tolivealie.com. Dry Socket. Sorry for your loss. Get it now or you're going to have to catch a repress because this thing's good. This is going to be one of those records that makes it this year. So check that out. we're going to swing over to Convulse Records, convulserecords.com. This one's going to be quick because it reflects the band. You know I love that. The Ultras, self-titled 7-inch. This is a band who I remember getting the demo, really liked it. Folks from World Peace and Fentanyl, two bands who are fast, fast, fast. This is fast, but also has some stomp to it. So if you like to, you know, kick your feet a little bit, this is there. Yo, honestly, this whole bucket of bands, whether it's World Peace, Fentanyl, I think you go over towards Spy even, Ultras fits in this. Get it now. Let me look. Is there the clear vinyl is still available right now out of 100, but I don't think it's going to last long. I ordered mine already. Go get this one. I if you like fast chaotic hardcore, this is it. So check it out. ConvulseRecords.com. Eric, I know how you're doing. I know how you're feeling. Tom, how are you doing and feeling on this Monday evening?
I'm doing all right. You know, it's a Monday. Long day at work, but it was fine.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
You're Eric, not... how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm
putting together, you know, I'm trying to trace, you know, where in the world is Patrick Hinlan?
Yeah, you know, like a Carmen Sandiego thing. I got these.
Eric, I have a pitch for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you're like our artiste friend, you know, you can make stuff happen. Okay. I want to maybe think of doing a reality show.
All right.
Of following Pat around the world, but him using people like listeners' Wi-Fi.
Oh, I see.
Like a Tony Bourdain kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, like he's in Glasgow. I'm like, we have to know some Glaswegian people that would let you come over and sit in their parlor for an hour.
Is Glaswegian is that the term?
It is.
Citizen?
The nomenclature, sure. Yeah.
I have family in Glasgow, so yeah.
Oh, wow.
Glaswegian.
So Tom, very
like Bell and Sebastian would have let him come over and use his fucking, like, come on.
100%. And he suggested this. Patrick was like, oh, scoff, hushaw. I don't want to get black mold by going to a peasant's house. Ugh. Something like that, I think, is what he said. I don't know if it was the direct quote. But I
lived in a garage for like a year. Remember that? It was the part that's too good for people.
So
is Patrick like our Larry David?
No,
no, he's you like, don't think so.
He's like Newman. Kinda. I think he's more like Newman.
Kind of in his he is more like Newman,
like a Michael Richards Laugh Factory energy. You know?
Wow.
So I have some questions, and I hinted at this to you guys. We're going to talk some hardcore today. This is a hardcore podcast. We're going to talk about things that I've been thinking about. Some things that I'm going to refer to as unpatriotic. Mm. Mostly because they're conversations that I think the three of us easily can have. But most especially the two of you can have that maybe Pat would be throwing a wet noodle into. You know? And Tom, occasionally... you've been known to have a conversation with Patrick that veers into topics that get too wily because his stance borders on, what's the word you would use on some of Patrick's more?
I mean, I don't think it's a stance. That's the problem.
That's right.
Like, I think like he's like, if you're going that way, all right, I'll take the other way.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I don't think he actually has like a real stance. He just likes to be like, what can I say to get the conversation started?
Sure.
And I appreciate it.
He attended a few too many debate club meetings as a teen.
At Bard. Yeah.
At Bard. Oh. So we're going to get to that. But before we do, let's talk some hardcore. We're going to once again do a big shout out to our friends in the band Cosmic Joke. Everybody should check out the new Cosmic Joke LP. We actually have a roommate of a band member on the show right now. That's right. Did you make it out to the Cosmic Joke record release show?
Well, number one, Evan's the man. Couldn't have a better roommate, great friend. Yes, I made it to the release show, and I also made it to their gig with MS Paint a few nights ago.
Oh, hell yeah. How was that show?
That was awesome. Packed out room at the Echo in Los Angeles. MS Paint is a band that I definitely slept on them, and they I'm sold now. They rock. And people are very into the Cosmic Joke.
Yo, and
some would say they're in on the Cosmic Joke.
Oh shit, yo, is that a t-shirt design or what? I'm in on the Cosmic Joke. That's so good.
All right, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Evan is an upgrade, right?
Oh my God. Are you kidding?
you know what I'm asking.
Oh yes, I know what you're asking.
So you just bring a green screen and a cot?
For the listeners, Patrick was my roommate once upon a time. Evan has been my roommate, I guess, longer at this point. Evan understands hygiene and cleanliness and washing one's dishes. And yes, he has a bed, unlike Mr. Kinlan, who slept on a cot. And when I would ask him, he would say, some variation of I don't deserve a bed.
Correct.
I was like,
he had a self put on goal of he needed to do X, Y, and Z before he would get himself a bed. So that he was trying to use that as motivation. I think he heard that on the Joe Rogan podcast once.
Probably.
And every day.
There would be times where I would say, so what's up? Are you going to get a bed? And he would go, what is it with you and this bed thing? He would get like very, very, very sassy about it.
Ironically enough, Patrick is my last roommate.
Mm.
That's a funny thing.
In Albany?
Yeah, 14 years ago.
Wow.
No, 15 now. Jesus Christ. So here's my question for you guys. Do you want a couple hardcore questions to kind of
some icebreakers?
Sort of like grease the wheels?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Grease them up.
All right. All right, we got a question here. Why do bands hate Jacksonville, Florida? LOL.
The question answers itself.
The LOL part there. Jacksonville, it is. Right, Tom, let's do a Florida city ranking hardcore version, and then we can do a non-hardcore version. I think Jacksonville is behind Miami and probably behind Tampa in the hardcore.
Probably. And Miami's version. Four.
Miami's real. Miami's
Miami, you have to make a trip.
Miami might be 6 hours from Jacksonville. Let's see. I got to see this. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but it feels like it's 6 hours.
I think FYA has helped establish Tampa as the capital.
Yep.
Right. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. Miami has its own scene and has for a long time. It's 5 hours from Miami to Jacksonville. Jacksonville had a real,
Florida had a real thing for a while.
For sure.
You could do two and three shows on a tour there.
Oh, yeah. Well, and think about Daytona Beach was a spot people would hit for sure. Orlando's always kind of phased in and phased out.
Gainesville still, right?
Gainesville's got its whole world of stuff. So you get that. So my answer is that hardcore doesn't hate Jacksonville. You might just be in a slump. Go ahead and book a show. Book some shows.
We caused a riot in Jacksonville.
Talk about the Jacksonville riot.
It was like The Promise and Us and who else? Love is Red and somebody else. There were Nazis at the show.
Whoa. That doesn't endear hardcore to the city. Okay.
No. And so the bands beat up the Nazis, bands and some of our friends from like Chicago and other and Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And then we realized the bouncers were like friends with the Nazis. So then we beat up the bouncers.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. What year was this?
2003.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the last band. And they unplugged everything while we were playing. Ooh. And there was a story like that. So the owner of the venue like gets up on the stage to like come after us. And a friend of the of some of ours that plays in a very, very popular Baltimore band who lived in Florida at the time apparently was like hanging from one of the pipes and kicked the guy's glasses off and then came down and stomped on them. It was like a very like a 90s, like this is what punk is like, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But then every time we'd come to Florida, they're like, we're coming to Pensacola. We're going to fucking kill you guys. And then they never did. But so that's Jacksonville's kind of weird for that.
Yeah.
How close is it to Atlanta?
Oh, Jacksonville to Atlanta is probably similar.
Okay.
5 hours. Let's see. I love map time. I think, is that an interesting, is Jacksonville, it's almost exactly, that's 5 hours to Jacksonville from Atlanta. So 5 hours from Jacksonville to Atlanta, 5 hours from Miami to Jacksonville. Is Jacksonville, could you argue that Miami, Tampa, and Orlando are not southern cities, but really just Florida cities, and that Jacksonville might be part of the South?
Could be.
And I don't say that I don't say that in a disparaging way. I say it because there was a time when, say, the band Kids Like Us was tied in with bands going up to Nashville, bands from Richmond, etc. Jacksonville was part of like a show circuit. Like there was a lot going on.
For sure.
And I don't know. I can't think of many current Jacksonville bands, and that's going back quite a ways. So people put us on to stuff. We'll check it out. I don't think people hate it. I think you might just be in a downswing. Sorry. Florida cities, my rankings go Miami. Then a long break. Then Tampa. And then could I just go back to Miami?
Like for fun or for hardcore?
Fun. Hardcore, the rankings are... To me, I still think I respect Miami. I've seen a lot of creative, weird stuff come out of Miami, and I think it's isolation's made it something. I think Tampa for sure. I think FYA has done a lot there. I think they got a world there. But Jacksonville, you know, could argue it's been as established. I don't remember.
What about Key West? Do you think there's ever been a hardcore show in Key West?
I do. Maybe one. I bet it was some goofy thing. You know what I mean? So somebody from South Florida. Key us into if there was a show in Key West. I will shout out to, is it Burrito Records? Do you remember this label?
Burrito they did the Records.
Failure Face 7-inch, Tom. Oh, let me see.
What was the name of the label?
Failure Face. I thought it was Burrito. I could be wrong. They were not in Tampa. Yep, Burrito Records.
Burrito.
Yeah. Bob Surin. There we go. Failure Face was awesome. Straightforward. Negative Approach is the band that everybody gets name checks, but like this is a band who's doing fast, straightforward hardcore in the early 90s and no one else was. Like we're talking 93, right. 94, 95 kind of stuff. They were awesome. And Burrito Records was awesome. I think I went to the Burrito Records store when I was down there a long, long time ago and it was really cool. So shout out. Did some cool stuff on Burrito. And that's in Brandon, Florida, something like that. Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Let's go, Brandon.
Okay. Well, you're leading to some questions. All right, another hardcore question. All right, sexiest hardcore frontman of all time.
Sexiest? Wow.
I know you
this
guys.
This one requires thought.
Stunned silence. Let's see.
Patrick's out of the conversation, right?
Yeah. Well, the least sexiest.
least six.
He did zero sex appeal whatsoever.
Well, you know, I mean, some people like a man who keeps a shopping cart in his bedroom.
Right.
That was a great.
He just eats and reheats Indian food.
Up by not doing video stuff in that era. That was such a good era for wily ass pink sweatpants, perched up on a cheap desk chair he probably found on the street with a shopping cart in his bedroom.
Like actually feral, paying, you know, $2,000 a month to be feral.
Yeah, little pile of tissues in the corner.
Oh god. And
just the fucking bottles of fucking yerba tea everywhere. Yeah.
All right, so we've identified the sexy. Let's say John Brandon, Henry Rollins. Henry Rollins, good looking dude for some time.
I remember being as a relatively hetero man,
for sure,
being taken aback by Kevin Baker from HopeCon. Baker,
yeah, good looking guy.
Like everybody in that band was like a fucking male model. I was like, God, all right.
We're going to have to do, this might be a whole episode, to be honest. We'll spend some time on this one. We'll do another one. We'll get to it.
I'm going Paul Bearer.
Right.
You may be hinting into some proclivities there. You might be showing off what you're into. Are we due for a post-hardcore revival?
I think it's already happening.
Yeah, that's. Well, right, I wonder if this person means a more true-to-form post-hardcore revival, but like,
that only happened once, though.
Yeah, and if you're not hearing the post-hardcore in stuff, the basements, the fiddleheads, the drug church, the adjacent world, you might be missing something. If you're looking for something like that that has a little more of a hard edge, it's out there. Go check out Narrowhead. You know, there's a lot of stuff. Narrowhead did tours in the same year with Quicksand and Helmet. Like, I don't know.
Right. I mean, dude, Soulblind,
oh, perfect. Yeah, exactly.
Curse the Knife, the band that Nick put out. Like,
yeah, no, there's a
lot of bands that are heavy and have that vibe. But I feel like post-hardcore, for being as much as we talk about post-hardcore, it happened once.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just a reaction to like the late 80s.
Well, hardcore. It was a reaction to the late 80s hardcore and going, where else can we go with this sound? I don't want to be too obvious, but like grunge's uprise certainly impacted a little bit too.
First.
That's pretty close. I think grunge came first, but roots grunge, like OG Soundgarden, Mudhoney, all that stuff.
Yeah, but Walter's like, yeah, we wanted to be Jane's Addiction.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay, let's see. Thoughts on King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Did not expect the band to sound like it did from the name.
Correct.
But I was not into it.
They're what, like jam metal?
I thought they'd be a little bit more like Sleep or something.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It's not. I like some of it. Their discography is so prolific and there's so many records.
But aren't they all different vibes too?
Yeah.
Like they don't have like a defined sound.
No, I mean, there's a target, but I don't. There's a center point, I should say, but none of it stays right to it. So if anybody's got the King Gizzard record, tell us what it is. What are some of your favorite records turning 20 this year? Okay. So another way to frame this is, what are some of your favorite records from 2004? We'll say 2003 to 2004. All right. Let's talk about this. First things first, set the scene. Let the ambush begin. Eric, what were you doing? How old were you and what were you doing in 2004?
Oh boy. I was 14 years old, 13 going on 14. I was in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. I was listening to bands like Catch 22, Streetlight Manifesto.
Yeah.
Thursday.
When they come for me, I'll be sitting at my desk.
There you go. You know it. You know the words.
I know, that's a hit, man. That's
some Victory Records bands. Thursday was big at the time, but that was also like the beginning of like a lot of the Long Island emo stuff. So like especially the girls that I went to high school with, everyone loved Taking Back Sunday.
Ooh, and right, we should clarify
where you want to be in 2004.
Yeah. Mm. And to clarify, you were living in deep Queens.
Border Queens, Long Island. However you want to, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, however people want to put it. Yeah, there we go.
If this is the thing. If I talk to people from Long Island, they're like, what? That's Queens. And if I talk to people from the city, they're like, oh, you're out on the island. I'm like, all right, yeah. Whatever.
I get it. I get it. Okay, let's see here. In 2004. Yeah, Tom, first and foremost, where were you?
The number one. Where was I?
Where were you in 2004? What were you doing? You're fresh out of MPB, right?
Fresh out of MPB, dating a woman that we lived with, mm-hmm. was working.
Schooling a little bit too?
No, I went back to school in 2005.
Okay, so you're in between.
The 2004 breakup, or the 2004 relationship broke up in 2005. I was like, what do I do with myself? I get an idea. I'm going to put myself in hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt.
Yeah, let's be a lawyer. Yeah, yeah, why not?
Are you in Sunset Park or Bay Ridge?
I'm in Bay Ridge at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
I sold that Sunset and because I couldn't have my girl living in Sunset, in Gunset Spark, you know? So we moved to, I lived in Bay Ridge.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm in California. I think 2004, I moved to Orange County from Encino.
We talked about Encino.
Huge upgrade. Huge upgrade. Everybody,
it's almost like a Patrick to Evan upgrade level.
I think that's a comparable. I had some fondness and warmth for the Valley, but Orange County is a much higher quality of life. Okay. 2004, records that turned 20 this year.
Here's the best one.
Go for it.
It might not be the best one. I think it's like it would be a consensus best one. We may not all agree here, but one with the underdogs.
Sure, that was a big record. Yes, 100%.
There's a lot of metalcore. I mean, this is from Google.
Yeah,
a lot of Sasscore, Blood Brothers, the plot to blow up the Eiffel Tower.
The Have Heart, What Counts EP, just so people can put that together. Nightmares, probably from Ashes Rise.
100 Demons.
Eric, maybe on your radar. Fuck World Trade by Leftover Crack.
Oh, come on. That's a classic. That was my political awakening at 14 years old.
All right. So for me,
what about Plague Landscapes? Was that 03 or 04?
I don't know.
The Locust? Anybody? Anybody?
I'm not there yet. Annihilation Time 2 came out. I like that record quite a bit. So that record's turning 20. I love that. I don't think I heard that Have Heart record for some years after that. No, I probably heard it like a year or so after that it came out.
There's another voice.
Another voice.
Wow. Yep. I'm sorry, Eric. The Locust record was Follow the Flock, Step and Shit.
Mm. Okay.
I believe, yeah, okay. Is this accurate? Did the 86 Mentality 7-inch come out in 2004? Okay, so that's 86 Mentality 7-inch 2004. I thought it might have been a little earlier than that, but yeah, that tracks.
Wow.
That record was great.
That great record. I could have sworn it was later.
No, they were around for a while, but the first 7-inch, I remember it came out as a Grave Mistake pressed like 300 copies, basically like, we don't know if anybody cares. And everybody loved it. And then they just popped off. And and it wasn't like they were ever a huge band. They've definitely gotten bigger in like posthumously, but that record rips. Especially now, people who are into the like street punk oi revival, if you don't know 86 Mentality, you got to.
So good.
Okay, yeah, maybe one of my favorite hardcore 7-inches from this time, the Justice Look Alive EP, the first Justice 7-inch. I love. If you are talking about like the best of the best locking out material, that first Justice 7-inch and the demo are right up there. Like, and they were so good live. Career Suicide, Jed Whitey split. That's some of my favorite Career Suicide material. That's certainly right up there. Fucked Up probably released a couple singles this year I liked. I'm looking through. Tom, anything on Outtakes for the Outcasts by Sick of It All?
No.
Okay.
I owned it. So, John, let me just take a look at the Outtakes for the Outcasts.
Mental Yo came out that year.
Low rated fantastic mental material. Rage of Discipline by Righteous Jams came out this year. I toured with them in Mental this year. I put out the Mind Eraser in conjunction with Painkiller. We put out the Mind Eraser Cave LP, also one of my favorite records of this year by far. That record's still a classic. Yeah, okay, that's a good smatter.
Oh, these are all like B-sides.
Oh, Knife Fight Burning Bridges EP. I helped make the cover for this record. I love that record. Yeah, okay, there you go. That's 2004. We'll do a year in hardcore 2004 at some point. This is an interesting, weird year because you are getting... Like, Tom, is this where some of the metalcore stuff goes sideways because you're getting like a lot of sassy stuff? Like,
it seems that way. Like,
and
looking
and what it was that, like the Under Oath, here's some... Okay, here's Shadows Fall. I saw some Under Oath thing.
You Found Me of Converge, which is
that's a big one.
Follow up to Jane Doe. It's different, slower. Descendants, Cool to Be You.
Oh, that one's got a couple good songs. Okay, yeah,
yeah.
Second Cold.
The Redacted Band came out with a big record in 2004. Champion
Promises Kept. Yeah, huge, yeah. Huge band. I can't like look. There's a really reason that they don't get talked about, but. It can't be understated how popular that band was at this time. Yeah. Is this time like this 2004, 5, 6? They were huge. Okay.
Wait, so, did World of Time come out then?
Or that sounds three? Right. Yeah. Oh, maybe. You know, whenever. Yeah, it's 03. World of the Time is 03.
Oh, Three Cheers for Street Revenge came out in 2004. And so did Futures by Jimmy Eat World. They're not hardcore, but they're a Jace.
Okay. All right. Jace, 2004 sure. Is a weird year because it's kind of transition. You are starting to get the pushback to like the AN. Like what happened with AN in 2000, 2001 for sure was so big. It reverberated for years, like 2001, 2002, 2003. You were still seeing kind of like AN clones. I think by 2004 that had stopped and you were starting to see stuff regress and change. Like there was just a tide change right then. So it's an interesting year for sure. But it is very weird to frame it as 20 years ago. I'll say that. all right. Preferred music format, vinyl, CD, tape, or digital?
It's all the same to me.
For ease, I would go digital, but I still like buying a record.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look.
Record is nice. It's nice to hold something in your hand and then all the artwork and the liner notes. But if we're just listening to it, it's streaming these days.
It's digital.
I mean, I always thought the iPod Classic is the ultimate music invention.
iPods are legit. Like,
I miss them.
When you first got when you first got an iPod, like you could put all the music you had on there three times.
Like anything you've ever listened to, if you've ever heard.
Yeah.
I got to tell you the pure unadulterated joy of getting on a flight with an iPod full to the brim. Yeah. Like I was like, oh my God, the future is amazing. It's like 2004 and I'm getting on a red eye to Boston from Long Beach. Like, this is so cool.
I mean, I was right on that cusp of in my book bag on the way to school for the early part of high school, middle school. It was a CD booklet and my Walkman. And by, I'd say, 9th or 10th grade, you got the iPod. And I was like, oh, I don't have to lug those CDs everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I had a CD book. I had a CD book well into the mid-aughts, even when I had my iPod for my truck, which just had a CD player. But it was, it was dated. Like, it was literally...
You know how hard it was to go on tour?
Yo.
Oh, my God.
To be like, I'm going to be gone for a month and a half. What CDs am I bringing?
Which, Tom, co-sign me on this. It doesn't matter how big the CD book is. By the time you're like 10 hours away from home, it feels like you listen to every single piece of music in there.
Yeah. It's like, what the fuck? What do I do now?
Yes. I'm tired of all this.
I would just opt for listening to Coast AM or something.
Yeah.
It was brutal. And before that, I had tapes that like, and because it was all a fucking psyop, they would find my tapes and like they'd record over the choruses with themselves singing.
No.
So like one day I'm like sitting there and all of a sudden I hear like Rachel singing Biggie, 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 can't you see? I'm like, I'm gonna fucking murder everybody on this fucking band.
Yo, yeah. That's an honestly, I would have been raging, but that's a fantastic
ending. Like, what a sigh. I mean, like, so, not nearly as bad as what I've heard other people do. Like, people would like, they'd rip out the last two pages of everyone's books.
Oh, that's brutal.
Or like a friend of ours, like a full chapter, like right near the end, like it's a 20 chapter book and you ripped out chapter 18. It's gone.
Oh, that's evil.
Okay. Good question. My preferred musical format it's vinyl, but really it's digital. It's just, you can't argue.
I really want to listen to fucking Iron Lung. You're not going to be like, let me go find that 7-inch. No, you're like, I'm just going to fucking type eight letters in and fucking get the whole discography.
It literally takes like the effort it takes to search something on your phone with your AirPods in. Like, I'm annoyed if I have to type a full name on streaming.
Right, you can't guess what it is. You know my algorithm.
It takes less than 6 seconds of energy to find like 80% of recorded history. It's outrageous. So, but it's still really cool to hold records. Still really cool. Is it bad to go to a show the night of your kid's second birthday?
Is the kid already sleeping? I don't have any problem with it.
Okay, you're good with it.
I'm not a dad though, so
Eric.
As someone with, if the kid he's gone to bed, I don't see any reason why he can't slink out the back and go catch the hardcore show. It's better than going to the bar, which is probably what most dads do.
Okay, sure. So here's my question for both of you. What time should a 2-year-old go to bed?
7.
I was going to say 8:30, but maybe that's late.
What? Yeah, your kid's going to be...
It's too late? 7? I mean, in the summer, the sun is still up.
7 is correct. 7 is the correct answer. Yo, wow, by 7 o'clock, a child... A two-year-old is very ready for bed. Do some go to bed later than that? Sure. I call those parents either maniacs or saints because I am ready to put a child to bed whenever. Winter, I've put my babies to bed at like 5:45. Oh, it's dark. I'll get that dinner early and I'll go, oh, I'm really sorry we're eating so late. We'll just go right to bed after this, okay? Okay. Good idea, Dada. No.
Wow.
Bob, you're also doing. You yourself are an early to bed, early to rise guy, right?
No, I'm just early to rise. I'll fall asleep. But no, I'm usually an 11 to 12. And I'll just, you know what my deal is for sleeping? I'll just fall asleep. Like if I'm bored or tired, it doesn't matter. Like wherever I'm at, like I'm going to go to sleep. Not at someone's house, you know what I mean? But like,
sure.
Watching a boring basketball game, I'll go to sleep. Watching a good basketball game, I'll stay up till 1. I don't care.
Okay.
The correct answer is exactly what Tom said, and you also co-signed, Eric. If your child has gone to sleep, live, damn it, live.
Right. The house is cleaned up. You didn't leave like anybody to like clean up like the fucking cake plates.
100%. Look, especially second birthday, like you can't miss the party, all that stuff. Don't miss the party. Don't miss any of the time. You'll kick your ass for doing that. You'd be a dumbass to do that. But my significant other not too long ago was like, oh, my friend from work is going to be in the city, said they were going to get dinner with another friend. They invited me up. But I don't, it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and we live about an hour from the city. And I was like, all right, so go. And she's like, oh no, I don't know. And I'm like, look, I can take care of the kids. Go, you know, if you don't live, you will regret it and you will always feel good living. Same time, you don't miss the big stuff for your kids. Easy answers. Do you think rollerblades, inline skates will ever be cool again?
No, they gave the crossroad.
I think they could be cool again. They always if Gabriel's gonna rollerblade to the Chelsea Piers, Gabriel's gonna rollerblade. I played roller hockey when I was probably like 11 years old, and they killed my lower back. I don't know what the deal was.
I've never rollerbladed properly. I've roller skated a ton. Shout out Guptils. But I always envisioned rollerblading. Is there a certain level of balance? Like, are you kind of like tipsy when you're standing up there on those thin, you know, inline skates?
Yeah, the wheels are pretty thick.
Okay, all right.
You get the hang of it pretty quickly.
And I think it's your baby back. You should have stuck with it. Could have been pro by now.
Could have been pro.
Let's see here. Are CDs coming back?
Yes.
Yeah, tell me more. I was at the MS Paint show. Cold God was one of the bands on the show, and they had a CD there. And I said, "Hey, look at that, a CD."
I think Days puts out CDs. I think it's a good idea for entry point.
100%, and
because not everyone could do $25 for a piece of vinyl, but if you can do $10 for a CD to check if you like it, and like people sell tapes, but that's. I buy them, so I'm not one to talk, but it's fucking stupid because no one's listening to a tape.
Yeah, no.
No one has a machine to play it anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone's got somewhere that you can put a CD in.
Yo, you know what's funny? Yes, correct. I largely agree. I don't think I have a CD player right now because my laptop doesn't have a CD player.
You got a PS5 though, baby.
Do you have a PS5? You're right. Okay.
I don't have to play CDs though.
I think it does, probably, right? Yeah. I can pull out I got a PS2 somewhere. I got something packed away.
I got a Dreamcast somewhere. It's fine.
Let me put this out there for people because I'm excited that labels are doing CDs again. I actually have been a proponent for this for a while. The cost to make CDs is really low. This is the secret. Put me in a space suit holding a gun. Always has been. When you were paying $25 for a CD in the 90s, that thing cost 11 cents. CDs are really cheap to print, basically. You're talking about even pressing a small amount, 500,000. As long as you don't go crazy with a booklet, and you can go crazy with a booklet, and it's still in relatively cheap.
Right.
You can make a 500 CDs for $600. Easy. 1,000 CDs for less than $1,000. So I think it's a smart thing. I think it's a cool thing. And exactly what Tom said, it's a fantastic entry point because a kid, or not even just a kid, but somebody who's new to this as a subculture or world, oh, cool, I'll check this out. Whereas exactly what Tom said, $25 LP, daunting. $10 CD. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, I can find somewhere to put this. Great.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And now, do you think, all right, so here's my question in response to that. Do you ever think there was a time that, like, they were completely a dead medium? Because here's my question. Here's why. Years ago, friend of the pod, Josh Truskill.
Yes.
Sends me a picture of this, like, giant warehouse.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Giant warehouse. Like, dude, like, mm-hmm. CDs as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, no, I've been there, Fontana. Yeah.
Oh, really? So it was in Jersey somewhere, I guess.
No, I think the one I don't know, maybe it was in Jersey. I know there was a big one I went to in Southern California.
But they were all Truskill things. Yep. And he goes, we're destroying all of them. Like, all of them?
By the pallet, yes.
And he goes, yeah, I'm just going to get rid of them. I'm like, dude, there's got to be stuff. I'm like, he's put out some stuff that nobody cares about. But I'm like, there's got to be some use in like the terror and the bleeding through and damn people. Like, there's got to be stuff you could do. He's like, dude, I've tried to bring these CDs to like Warped Tour or like different shows that are happening. And I go to hand people free CDs and they look like you just tried to hand them like a piece of poop.
Yeah.
Like nobody knows, like, what the fuck are you doing to me, old man?
Yo,
were they that out of?
Yes. Like, unequivocally, yes. 2005, 6, 7-ish range. I'm working at Rev. CDs fall off a cliff. The vinyl rebirth isn't there.
Oh.
Yet. It was...
When's the vinyl rebirth? 08? Like 07, 08?
Shortly thereafter. I mean,
2008 was the first
hardcore. Yeah. Vinyl was always... Sure. Always kind of there. Like, look, Mental was selling a bunch of LPs. Any band who's anything worth shit was selling records. Ask Fucked Up. They didn't not sell vinyl. They were selling thousands of those records. So vinyl was always there, but on the next step up level. Like, I was at Rev, who had a vinyl base. But for example, the End of a Year record, we didn't press on vinyl. It got pressed on vinyl by somebody... a label who was associated with the band who was like, no, we needed this on vinyl. But Rev never did a vinyl pressing of Sincerely because it was like, we don't think we're going to make any money of it. Yo, Revelation Records, if you repress Sincerely on vinyl, you will sell all of them. People want that record on vinyl. So go get it. Anyways, and especially if it was on Rev, Jesus Christ. Yeah. But that was at the time. There's actually, I used to do like interviews about this where people would be like, are CDs dead? And I'm like, kind of, yeah. And it's really scary because vinyl sales hadn't caught up. Digital was this complete Wild West at that point. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I bet there were more, like, some of those download blogs, you know, like Mediafire was certainly getting more hits than people were clicking
purchase. It sold more records than
clicking purchase on Apple Music or whatever it was at the time on iTunes, you know.
And then Taylor Swift came along and made vinyl a thing. And thanks, T-Swizz.
You know, what happened was the market adjusted. The market kind of self-corrected. It was like, okay, what do people who consume music buy now? Look, I had a great friend and roommate Joey, who did the record label 6131, has the record store in Boston, Wanna Hear It Records. Please go check it out. Fantastic record store. He had more CDs than any human I've ever met. Walls, like thousands. It looked amazing. He worked at a record store and then worked at Rev and then worked at another record label. But he loved music and loves music as much as anyone I think I'd ever met at that point. And he had a big record collection, collected vinyl, but also had an unbelievable CD collection. Like, I just can't even explain what it was. And there was a lot of people who had that. And like, even with friends who weren't vinyl collectors, like, you know, me and friends of mine would go meet up at Tower Records in LA, and you know, you just flip through CDs and check out what's in the used bins and da-da-da. It was like the record store culture wasn't just vinyl nerds. It was like, oh yeah, let's go to Amoeba and buy music, look at stuff, look at media, and you know, like, listen to how many episodes of Axe to Grind where Patrick and I both get weird and wistful about the listening station at Generation Records. Like, it's like, oh yeah. Like, yo, I was there twice a week, three times a week, and I didn't even live in the city. I was just there all the time to do it. So to answer your question, Tom, yeah, it died to the point where like we were doing very conservative pressings of stuff wholesale, like, because we're like, we don't know, we don't want to make too many CDs and be stuck with 1,000 of these sitting around, because who knows if in 5 years anyone will buy CDs. And you know what happened? People still buy CDs, but not like they once did. Like, I wish we could get scope on these things. Like, I'm willing to bet. Okay, you gave a great example, Trustkill. I bet if you asked him for the numbers, like, how many CDs did you print of the first Most Precious Blood record, right?
Right.
It would be pallets worth. Thousands.
Probably five figures.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, if it was less than 10, I'd be shocked. It could be as much as 20. Just because even at that point, the initial ships were down at that point from a few years before that. But even at that point, it was like, oh yeah, we're gonna have X amount of copies out at retail. You know, like that record was everywhere. You know what I mean? Like that record was at Best Buy. You know what I mean? So
right.
That's the thing people have to understand, the scale of these things. Like you could go into Barnes & Noble anywhere in the country probably and buy the Most Precious Blood CD. What? How cool is that? It's cool. Right, right. It's cool. And that's just not the way it exists anymore. So we've now kind of, CDs have flipped and become the like less expensive, but still, and that's what they were before, they're an easy medium to get into and open the door. And also like low key at a merch table, that might be the cheapest item on the merch table now, right?
Yeah.
Like it's cheaper than a shirt, cheaper than a hoodie, cheaper than vinyl, cheaper than a hat. So if you like the band you just saw and you want to support them, but you don't really like that shirt design and you just heard them for the first time, and well, you're certainly not going to buy the record. Oh, they have CDs. Yeah, I'll buy a CD. Sure. $10. Low effort, but here's something I can buy. And that's like an odd, weird capitalist way to look at it. But I also find that to be true. Like sometimes people want to come over, look for something on your table to support you because they like you. And that's kind of like a hardcore kind of thing to do. But if they don't like your shirt designs, or maybe they're just not merch people and they don't buy vinyl, what are they going to do? So that's that about that. I got one more before I go to a couple topics that are very unpat that I wanted to get out of you guys. We did answer some of these. Sorry, I'm doing the leftovers here. Wow, I thought these were hardcore questions, but we got a lot of not. Would you rather pee out a marble or poop out a softball?
God.
Oh, God.
It's nightmarish.
Look, guys.
I bet I would go poop out the softball because I bet once that thing passes, it feels really good.
Yeah, I'd probably go poop out the softball. I feel like the other thing might like really do some... lifelong damage.
Yeah.
We're all on the same page. That's it's not even just like an opinion. That's the correct answer. Full stop. All right. Someone's asking for a self-defense family end of year deep dive. When? Sometime we'll do that.
Did you know that? I think it was last year. Try Me was 10 years old.
I did.
An
excellent record.
Really good record.
Very odd, but perhaps a couple of the most accessible self-defense family tracks on that record.
That is the record for SDF. Self-defense. Maybe not for end of a year.
But. I think it's Duets for me. But I also, I think Mistress Appears, which is on Try Me, is outrageous. Fantastic. Just a fantastic song. Okay, we're going to get some more hardcore questions. Here's my question for you guys, because you're both... More than anything, what I appreciate about you two as individuals is that you're thoughtful. You care about the world at large. Mm. Well, you know, but you also understand that there's many sides to issues.
Sure.
That said, is hardcore in a good place for people to be getting political understanding or meaning, especially in 2024?
No.
Start us off. Tom, why do you say no?
There's a lot of nuance to a lot of stuff that happens in the world. And people now are too dumb for nuance. And I think no matter what you say, someone's going to take it in the wrong spirit. I mean, there's some things, obviously, that are fucking very clear. You know, like, and Patrick always says it. It's like, you know, not to bring up the ghost, but like, you know, like, yeah, you can be like, fuck Nazis. I mean, sure. Yeah, of course. You're really going out on a fucking limb by saying that? You know what I mean? But I think, you know, I think people are not as willing to put themselves out there. And more and more, and maybe this is my old age, it probably is my old age showing, like, I feel like people ain't there for that shit.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, yo, wrap it up, dude. Nope. You know what I mean? Like, going to see fucking, you know, Trial or fucking Strike Anywhere or like even bands in our era, it's like not even like, yeah, you know, like, you know, Ray Capo talking for 10 minutes. Like, people are like, yo, money. Like, I could have moshed three songs in the meantime. Like, what the fuck?
There's some sonic tapping right there.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like people are not there. Like, it's more of a form of entertainment.
Oh, wow.
Than a place to be informed about veganism or, you know, or you know, gay rights or like that stuff that's political.
Right. Yeah. These socio-political items, whether they're for the individual or the collective. Sure. Eric, how do you feel about that? Do you think that's hitting some points or not?
Well, so I think politics within punk, within hardcore, has always been a part of it to some degree. And I think what you'll find for the most part is radical versions of politics within that. And punk, which is often not in the pejorative sense, but punk is often stupid and it's often a stripped down, sloganeering, radical type of message. And that's fine and has its place, and is, when it's good, it's good. I like certainly a lot of bands that are political. But if you're looking for nuance or for a healthy understanding of the world or a full, you know, a well-rounded version of whatever it is, that's definitely not the place to get it. You know, you're going to get something loud in your face generally and simplistic. Cause that's also part of the genre. So, you know, it's interesting. I think the moment that we're in, I think for the most part, most bands I'm exposed to anyway, are pretty unpolitical. They're out there, but, I think we still have a collective hangover of the Trump era, which continues. And I think a lot of times people are just like, yeah, man, I get it. Like, Trump's a scumbag. Right. You know, yada, yada, yada. We understand. I think people are kind of at the place people are in now, I think, is more just in the, like, hardcore to me, it's like in punk, it's certainly entertainment, but it's also like my connection to it has always been, even if I wasn't in a band, it's always just been like catharsis. Like moshing is cathartic, you know, listening to the music and screaming the lyrics is an outlet. And, you know, that's my relation to the genre. And politics will always have its place. But if you want a healthy, full understanding of it, you should, you should seek out various forms of, you should expose yourself to lots of different forms of that and of develop the,
of,
your own
of
opinion.
Information sources. Sure.
Yeah.
So here's my question, because I ask that because it's like, it's an, you know, I try to step out of these things because so often I think it's the individual speaking and be like, this is the craziest things I've ever been, you know, and you have to stop and go, well, wait a second. I'm speaking from my perspective as a dude who I am and the way I see things and the way I've been paying attention to things. You know, I think there's been a lot of times where the world's been pretty hectic and hot. So I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I do want to say that it is an interesting time. And obviously in this country, we got an election coming this year that I got to say, I couldn't feel more apathetic about. I had prognosticated. I'm like, uh-oh, I have a feeling this is going to be an election that no one I know is excited to vote for anyone.
Yeah.
And that said, I wonder about that. It's almost like this nihilistic view of it is that I'm like, I don't know. And I wonder if it feels more pervasive because I feel that's shared in this community, you know, in hardcore. I see that a lot. But I also see it broadly. And I wonder if that's something that's magnified or kind of not magnified, amplified, because there's a lot of voices saying that in a space that's largely, and I like the term used for it, Eric, unpolitical, not apolitical, not, but unpolitical, which isn't to say it's fully uninformed, but I don't think that hardcore right now at large would claim to be the leading place to learn about what's going on in the world or this country or even your local place, you know?
No, but I mean, I think in addition to like it being that like a space for like an outlet for young people or even, you know, geezers like us.
Sure.
I think it's also just like what I think is so cool about punk and hardcore and like going to DIY venues and, you know, shows in a laundromat or in a VFW or in someone's yard. It's like, yo, I'm glad that there's a thing that exists outside of the larger world. Like, and I have a connection to it and I can, I know people within it and, you know, you make friends and I can form a band and be a part of it. Like, to me, that's the big, like, and that notion in and of itself is political. Like, just being counterculture, which isn't to say against the culture, but again, but just outside of it and having that connection, I think is like so fucking important to like a person's development. Like, you know, and I think it's cool to learn about radical politics and veganism and stuff like that.
No, things, I agree with that. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, and especially, I think that's a part I try to put in here is that the idea of what the perspective of a 18, 20, 22, 24 year old who's getting to see these things, if that's something they haven't been exposed to, or this is the exposure point to is unique. And, you know, look, there's people all around this country who do look at things in like a binary way, you know, like, well, you're either going to be this or you're going to be that. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be a Democrat or you're going to be a Republican. And I think maybe more than ever, I see this idea that hardcore and also, to be honest, I see hardcore has become quite a bit less dogmatic. You know, there's goods and bads on that. You know, there's a lot less people who are, hey, I am straight edge. I am vegan. I am this. I am that. I'm hardline, whatever. But at the same time, it's starting to suss out that like, hey, grays exist. And that's cool. Like understanding yep. that there's spaces in between definitions that in themselves deserve that respect.
Yeah.
Tom, how do you feel about all that? Where do you see that? Do you see it from like the, because I sometimes have to sit myself down and remember like, oh yeah, there's a young person coming to this who is feeling the radicalness, even though to me, having been immersed in this for 445 years, maybe I'm going, is it though? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think some people are like political just by existing.
Sure. Sure.
You know what I mean? And I think that's also comes with the change of over the years. You know what I mean? Like you see an Earth Crisis show from 1993, everyone's as pale as I am.
Yeah, no question. Yep.
You know what I mean? Pale, you know, emaciated, and predominantly men.
And it's changing. And it's changed. And that's why I talk about like, when I'm like, man, things are really crazy right now. I'm like, you know what though? Given backgrounds, there's probably people out there who would say, you know, it was pretty rough for me after 9/11.
Right, right.
It wasn't really rough for me after 9/11. You know?
Right, for 400 years. Yeah, I mean, I think we just see it because it's like, you know, you could fucking, every time you open up your phone, there's someone else, you know, dying. And so it's like, yep. Our parents, our families were never inundated with that sort of stuff, regardless of where you're from.
Not in the same way, no. No, no, no. I do think about, the only comp I can make to it is the way people talk about Vietnam and how it was covered on TV, because it was heretofore at that point, it was unheard of the level of coverage. And when we compare that to now, it's completely like it's right. But to that point, people were like, and you just realize it's all, you know, it's gradient. You know, it's like, oh, they got this much of the door open. Well, that's more than, that's a lot. Some is a lot more than zero, and they were getting zero before that, you know?
I think it's also crazy. Beyond, as you said, just building on what Tom said, like beyond the racial spectrum being a lot more diverse than it was a long time ago, I think every show I went to until, I don't know, 2014, 2015 was a complete sausage fest. Now the ratio to women to men is like, you know, maybe it's not 1-to-1, but it's certainly a lot closer.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to be said for that. There's a lot to be said for that because it is a changing thing. So anyways, I wonder.
Politics
about,
has its place, but don't kill each other unless obviously the Nazis are not welcome. You can push them out, but you know what I mean? Brave statement, but let's not that's the only thing when it comes to the political stuff. It's like, hey, you're vegan. This guy isn't. Let's not kill each other. We can all still go to the same shows together.
Well, yeah, I don't even know if that's a thing. I feel like that's Roger. Like that's something like Roger should be saying in like 1996. I think
Punks now and Skins.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like I feel like now it's just sort of like to me when I meet a younger person and they're not fucking super left wing.
Yeah,
or they're like super religious. I go, really?
Yeah,
like you didn't learn.
Well,
like I'm always shocked when someone's like young and very, very religious.
Oh, Tom,
and that's probably shitty on my part, but I'm like, really?
I'm going to be somewhat ambiguous, but oblique on this. I'm not going to be transparent because I'll protect the innocent. Came across a late 20s, not involved in the hardcore, but a guy I've interacted with who. Very religious, and you would everything else about this person, what they do, what they're involved in, what they, you know, all this stuff, you wouldn't know that, but very casual, like, oh yeah, of course. And it was jarring to me in that same way, like, whoa, really? But then you realize how, like, that's not as uncommon as we might think it is because of where we sit.
It's not.
It is. And I have to tell you, the younger I, so I've told the story that when I first hit the DARE program in, you know, fifth grade, whatever year that is, 92, 90, whatever, 93, whatever, I was like, this is awesome. Cool. None of us are going to smoke cigarettes. Awesome. We all know better now. Awesome. I have to tell you, I think we're going to see a huge cycle of more conservative, more religious young people. And I hope I am so wrong. But that's based on being a parent and seeing that some people are raising their children in a way that might align with the tone and tenor of 50% of the country. Oof. And it is sort of jarring. It's sort of jarring.
Well, that's a fucking bummer.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. That's always been the way and everything, you know, it's the slow crawl. I don't know. There's a lot to be talked about more on this because, you know, you made a mention of nuance, both of you did, and that's what I ask. I think that we're in a bad place if we can't speak with nuance to each other about things within hardcore. And it's about things outside of hardcore, but if you're talking to somebody, you know, hopefully you're on a similar starting point, even if you have different ideas, the idea of people needing to share the same thoughts, to share thoughts, is really scary to me. So anyways, let's close with a couple quick hot takes here. This one's good because I don't know Eric's take. Eric and then Tom. This is someone's hot take. Perseverance, hate breed perseverance, is way better than satisfaction.
Not way better, but Perseverance has tracks. I would still defer to Satisfaction, but
Tom, I mean, it is a hot take. It's a wrong one.
It's wrong.
Yeah,
but it's a hot take nonetheless.
Okay, but not. It's not
Satisfaction. Satisfaction is the Age of Quarrel of the 90s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Perseverance is not.
Fugazi sucks.
Hot take. And also wrong.
Wrong. Big wrong.
Coming from a young person, that's surprising.
Here's the thing.
I like Fugazi a lot.
Eric's young, but he's not young enough. If you're somebody under 30 and you said Fugazi sucks, what am I going to argue with you? Like, no, man. You got to give this Fox football bumper music a try.
I think you know what's funny, though?
Under 30, I, like, you know?
I would say The Argument is a perfect record. I would definitely I would take that over a lot of their early stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I would take Argument over most of their albums.
Wow, okay.
But you know, this is a funny thing, like when we talk about stuff like this, like it's a funny perspective because even though we're only, you know, so many years apart, you guys and I, like there's certain like you guys got you experienced records like as they came out, like I got the Fugazi discography, you know, in 2004, 2005.
Right,
you
complete. Know? Like, this is everything. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, getting it in one chunk, it's kind of like it's different than experiencing it as a progression.
That's a good point.
100%. 100%. Once again, everybody needs to understand that in a room of floating objects, you are a floating object and the other things are too. And how you experience things is different from how someone else does. It's just how it is.
Can I just point something out about Fugazi?
Of course.
You know, like they have like that live series.
Mm-hmm.
That like they pretty much recorded like almost all their shows
extensive,
ever.
Extensive, yes.
So I was just like, oh, when was the first time I saw them, right? So I saw them on, it was them and Jawbox.
Wow.
And Mecha Normal at Roseland. They did two nights sold out at Roseland, 7,000 tickets.
People that's don't insane. Understand how big they were. In the
$5 a ticket because they wouldn't go over $5.
Yep.
My God.
Yeah, I did, that was their thing, Eric. They would not charge more than $5.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
So that's the stuff that I think might get lost.
7,000 tickets in two nights.
Two nights, 3,500 people per night. What that room's like, what the energy was like, you know?
Ugh.
Because what you see now is people getting, you know, people seeing the, like, lectures. The 20-second clip of somebody being yelled at for dancing too hard. Or those, you know, stories. Fugazi was a very, very, very good live act.
Oh, so good. So, especially at this point. This is on like repeater, I think.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Also, yeah. Isn't 93? It just cool, like going back to just like the broad idea of politics, like a band like Fugazi really throwing their weight around by saying the tickets are $5.
Right. You wanted to book us, it's $5.
That's so
cool. One time I was talking to someone very close to the Fugazi situation. And I think I referred to Fugazi as rigid when referring to stuff about the $5 shows. Some of the details, like they had, correct me if I'm wrong, all vegan, right, Tom?
I believe so.
I believe so too. And so it was sort of like, hey, there's no animal products on site kind of thing, the whole thing. And the person kind of stopped me and was like, I wouldn't say rigid, I would say thoughtful. And I thought that was a much kinder way to frame it for sure. So, I mean,
I've seen them at a place like Roseland where I saw like Rage Against the Machine and Slayer. And I saw them at the PWAC on Long Island, which was like a giant fucking, industrial, like left, you know, like a giant building. Like those dudes have, you know, they played fucking NYU. They played, you know, like.
Yep.
They've literally played everything. I mean, and I, just to have the foresight to fucking record everything is the coolest goddamn thing. If any bands out there, if you have the wherewithal to like record your shit while you're out there, and you know, like, can you imagine coming home from a tour and be like, oh yeah, we have every show.
Oh, incredible. Love it. All right.
You know what I mean? It's so fun. Cool.
Truly Yours is Sick of It All's best record.
It's yours truly, and it's wrong.
I don't think I've ever listened to that one.
That we toured with them on that one, and it's a very underrated record. But it's not
the best.
It's not a top five Sigfidal record.
No.
Crocs should be allowed in hardcore.
Absolutely not.
Crocs, the shoes?
Here's my thought. I think Crocs should be allowed in the way that they are used in athletic events. Tom, I don't know if you're familiar with this because it was a thing not when we were kids because obviously Crocs didn't exist. Crocs are so big with like kid ball, like hoopers, because they wear the Crocs to the gym, then put on their basketball sneakers.
I mean, that's fine.
So if the moshers want to Croc up to the show, then put on their boots, put on their Nikes, whatever they're going to do, you better bring your A game. But if you bring your A game in that pit or stage, yo, I've seen some stage divers. If they were changing out of Crocs before they hit the stage, I'd be like, all right, yo, you know, like that person's doing something.
Yeah, I did this here. I'm thinking we've talked on here before. Nothing makes me as irrationally homicidal as people that wear flip flops and jeans.
Oh,
yeah. Especially the shows. Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah, it was a thing for sure.
It was like a Virginia Beach thing or something. And I remember being like, God fucking damn it. You have a small t-shirt on and jeans and flip flops. Like something happens with how you run in flip flops and you ain't moshing in flip flops. That's how you break a toe.
I can't stand. I don't like men wearing open-toed shoes. I don't want to look at your fucking hoof.
I will
you
say,
hairy cover it up.
What's the term? I think,
Pat, if you're at the beach, fine.
Right, but not in any kind of social thing.
No, the beach is acceptable. That's it.
Horse hoof trimming, which there's a. What is the name for it? It's a.
Oh God, that was on one of Pat on his YouTube.
Oh, we both had it on our algos. It's fantastic. It's very fascinating to watch.
Is that what they like? Oh, it looks like it hurts, but it probably doesn't.
Well, so like a horse can get a like, I'm talking like.
It's like a mani pedi.
Like well yeah exactly well it, but imagine if you could get a. Is like the size of a raspberry seed, the kind of thing that would get stuck between your teeth, like that small. A horse can get that embedded in their hoof, and if stuff grows over it, it gets like a crazy abscess, leads to these crazy infections. So, God, I'm forgetting the name for this. But yeah, hoof trimming is very, very necessary. Great, great Instagram hole to fall down. Last one, guys. This one feels a little hot. Beyond Planet Earth would crush in a post glow on market.
Oh. Ooh.
It's been a while since I listened to it. I'm going to say no. But
no, I'd say no, but I would think if we're talking mantra.
Yeah.
I think Beyond Planet Earth is too far. It's like too all over the fucking place.
It's just not good enough. Honestly, you know what I mean? Mantra, I think it's just not good enough. Mantra is just full on a much, much better record. Beyond Planet Earth is trying to. Beyond Planet Earth is trying to out mantra and go like one step beyond what Mantra was doing and fails partially because it doesn't have the tracks. Mantra has tracks.
I mean,
is that the one? Is that the one with the ska track?
Beyond Planet Earth has the ska track.
Right. I missed my birthday or something.
I spent my birthday all alone.
Yeah.
I spent my birthday all alone. Yeah.
I mean, that's a certain... You know, it's. I don't know if we talk about it enough or if maybe you guys have talked about it before, but I mean, there's got to be a lot of speculation and this could be a whole episode, but like what, like the direction, Turnstile's next album. I am so intrigued as to what goes down.
Right. Yeah. Is it more like Underwater Boy or is it more TLC?
Yeah.
Or do they just keep that fucking, that percentage how like fucking Bad Brains would do it and it would just be 70% hardcore and 30%, you know, dub.
Oh, you want a hot take?
I want a hot take.
I think if you listen to Glow On and you listen to Time and Space, as albums, listen front to back, you can hear structural flow, holistic similarities. Glow On goes a little bigger, obviously much more popular. That's the big record, you know. But you can see that it's, I don't want to say they're the same record. They're not even close. They're very different, but you can kind of go, oh, Glow On is them plussing up Time and Space.
Sure.
Shout out to Sandwiches of History, Instagram account. If anybody's not watching it, you need to. Sandwiches of History. It's so good. Shout out to my man, Barry. It's a plussed up version. They need, so in the same way that Rock for Light is a plussed up version of the Roar sessions, it's like, you know, like vaguely doing the same thing, just much better production, have a few more tracks, different stuff, blah, blah, blah. They need their eye against eye. They need to change it up a bit. I don't know what that means. Sonically, they need to do something that brings them to a different place. And I don't want them to go more pop accessible. But it, the yearning, the desire, I'm sure, from people would be there. But it's sort of like, could Turnstile do something? Could Turnstile see growth in the way they saw growth from Time and Space to Glow On, from whatever come to whatever comes next, without going pop punk or any kind of corny garbage? Because I'll just say it full stop, I don't think Turnstile would do that. Like, I don't see them just trying to write, like, I don't see them trying to write half-ass Blink-182 songs. So
I think they can continue. I think their upward trajectory could continue doing exactly what has gotten them this far.
That's right. Can you hit us with one more of the birthday song, Tom?
I spent my birthday all alone. I don't know if that's the thing. I think that's how it goes.
If it isn't, it should. Good night, everybody.
Good night.